Welcome to Whispers of Oxenfurt, a podcast based on the Witcher universe by Polish author Andrzej Sapkowski. This episode will cover the Tower of Swallows, Chapter 8. Afterwards, or after the summary, I will discuss a little bit about storytelling between different mediums and things like a point of view. Different mediums, of course, being a novelization such as this, and maybe becoming, I don't know, like a TV show or something like that, and how the storytelling is different. But first, I would like to read an email from Danny from Chile. So I don't really have much people to talk about the saga and the game, so I love hearing your chapters, and you are so very nice. I am kind of a radical feminist, and I hate hearing dudes talking shit about women and female characters through novels, as if they know shit. But you are always so sweet and careful that I don't mind. Yes, I don't have much tolerance for the Chilean or Latino American, or Spanish, manliness in general. Like chapter where Ciri is raped by a missile. Dude, thank you for saying it. Most people just get captivated by the pornographic idea of a lesbian heroine, but they miss the point so much. So I hope this email gives you some happiness, and please go on. I never miss your episodes. I feel lonely about my fantasy readings because I can't share this with friends who read a lot because my friends just don't read that much. A big hug from Chile. So Danny, again, thank you very much. And I've said it in the past, especially when I discussed that I do think a large segment of the Witcher fan base, I do not think it is majority book readers. I think it's majority of the people that have only played the games think that this is just about some real manly Witcher who goes around just bedding broads and slaying monsters, when that is so not what these books are about. And so I'm glad to see that that's kind of coming off. I know when I started off, I kind of maybe, again, I have to go back and listen to those first episodes, which I don't want to. I think maybe I kind of danced around it a little, but yeah, I'm not dancing around it anymore. This is what it is. The good thing about having your own podcast is, well, you can do whatever the hell you want. So, this is mine, and I can do what I want. He also mentioned, or he or she, actually, I don't know, it's Danny, D-A-N-Y, so, that they have a podcast, but it's in Spanish. So, again, Danny from Chile, good luck. How about good luck with your podcast and everything, and I hope you continue listening. Thank you very much. And the last thing before we begin, and it's kind of going to be why I'm going to do that very short, basic analysis of the storytelling, is because of this chapter. And it's not that I like the chapter, and I've kind of beaten around this bush of saying like, well, I didn't like this. Oh, this is just the way the storytelling goes. But it's almost where this chapter just throws a stick in the spokes of the story, where we've had everything kind of going, and then we just take this immediate turn off to join Dijkstra and this king for this almost standalone chapter that goes on for, there was a point where I think it was 5 or 6 pages, it might have been more, of just the history of Kovir and their relationships with all of this. And it's like, okay, like, I mean, it is interesting, but again, it's just this information dump in chapter 8. You know, we're past the halfway point of this book. And it just really, really just stopped down and kind of, threw the narrative into a ditch. And so the summary is going to be pretty short, because while it was interesting to hear about that lore and to go over this, it was incredibly boring for me to write it out. And if I just talk about it, that's just going to be horrific. It'll be like I'm reading an encyclopedia article, and that's just terrible. So again, this is for people who have read the books, who have read this chapter, so you kind of know what's going in there. And if there is something you want me to comment on that I don't mention here, which there was quite a bit, again, email, tweet, do whatever, and I will gladly discuss that with you and anybody else who would also like to chime in. So here we go, Tower of Swallows, Chapter 8. The chapter leads off in the port city of Lan Exeter, the winter capital of the Kingdom of Kovir, a city bearing much resemblance to the real-life Venice, Italy, where there's no real streets but a series of canals, with travel done by boat. Redanian head of intelligence and spy, Sigismund Dijkstra, is in Kovir to parley with the king, Estorad. Redania and Kovir have not had the best relationship in the past. Estorad proceeds to berate Dijkstra as a whoreson and say that he won't bat an eyelid in order to order an assassination, but that he likes and even admires the spy for it. He says that he is a man of principle, and that is why the king has granted him a private audience. DJ asks for 1,000,000 byzants, which is scoffed at by Estorad, who shows him a relief map of the continent, in which it is evident Nilfgaard will be victorious. We get an update and refresher on the war. Foltest has made peace with Emir, which lasted for a whopping 16 days, but the winter will stop Nilfgaard. But what will happen in the spring? Estorad will show him. We jump away to another spy, Cantarella, as she is informing her mentor, if you will, a sire, of what the Nilfgaardian offensive will look like. A three-pronged attack led by Menno Korn in Temeria, Ardal Ebdai to Kedwin, and Joachim de Vett in Verdun. She says Vatier is sad because he was reprimanded by Emir for losing track of Stefan Skellen. Cantarella asks a sire if she has almost finished playing the fool, and the response is soon. When Cantarella leaves, a sire dials up, in the parlance, Philippa Eilhart, and they will have a discussion. Back in Kovir, Estorad says that they will always be neutral, and they signed a treaty years ago with Nilfgaard anyway. At night, in bed with his wife, Estorad mentions he keeps having a dream that involves Ciri as a wife for Tancred, their son, and heir. They mention summoning an astrologer, and Sheila de Tancerville just happens to be in town. Not that witch, the king says. Too clever. Another Philippa. Estorad plans a ring around to get the 1,000,000 byzants to Redania by giving maritime shares to the Hierarch of Novigrad and releasing prisoners who will in turn help the north. And the spy, Dijkstra, thanks him profusely. Estorad also, very shrewdly, of course, claims the 1,000-crown bribe that was planned for his minister. Zaluka, the queen, has been behind those weird dreams of her husband, well, her and Sheila. In return, the mage assures the queen that Tancred will stop chasing skirts and hanging out with the bad crowd. He will soon return to a suitable state and be ready for Ciri. The king and spy discuss the cooling weather, peace in the country, and about the death of Yennefer of Vengerberg, whom Estorad says was no accomplice of Vilgefortz, and I have the proof if you need it. Dijkstra says, no thanks, it is better for her to remain a traitor, for now. The king warns him to tone it down a little. The torture chambers, atrocities against elves, they will get you, sooner or later. It is easier to stab a king than a spy. They will never get me. He could have fought back. The misty, unseeing eyes of Giscard Vemulen gaze into the abyss of his recollections. There were only three assassins, and Grandpapa was a powerful man. He could have fought, defended himself until the guards arrived. He could have simply fled. But Grandmama Zaluka was there. Grandpapa shielded and protected her. Only her. He didn't care about himself. When help finally arrived, Zaluka wasn't even grazed. Estorad had been stabbed more than 20 times. He died 3 hours later, without regaining consciousness. To discuss the differences in storytelling in regards to point of views, let's first describe two of the main ones, and especially as they apply to medieval novels, or medieval fantasy novels, I should say that. So The Witcher is done through what is called third-person omniscient, meaning the narrator knows everything, knows every detail. The narrator storyteller, it should say, as we read this, knows every detail, and nothing can really be hidden. For instance, the other actually the only other fantasy novel series that I've read, A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, uses third person limited, in which each chapter is from some character's individual point of view. And so the biggest difference in the storytelling of The Witcher and A Song of Ice and Fire, if you haven't read that series, is when in A Song of Ice and Fire, each chapter is after a character. So the one is Arya. And in that chapter is literally inside of that character's head. We know her deepest secrets, her deepest regrets, everything. But we only know what she knows. So if she doesn't know what another character's name is, we will not get that character's name, despite the fact that maybe we were reading all about that character two chapters ago. But they can't say it because she doesn't know who that is. In The Witcher, we will always get the characters that are there. They can't really hide. They can if it's more or less the person is literally like disguised or hooded. But you can't really trick the reader and pull a fast one on the reader in the third person omniscient without like cheating. I mean, you still kind of can, but it's really hard to do it and it just not be cheating, because again, the way we're doing this is you can't really hide who these people are. You could very easily do that in third person limited because again, they don't know who it is. It's just the way they describe them. And you can kind of figure it out based on that description. But in like The Witcher, they'll never say when describing, let's say Ciri walks in the room, it's like, oh, a young ashen-haired girl with a slash across her cheek. You know, they wouldn't say that because they would just say Ciri. Well, as opposed to if it was third person limited from a character who didn't know her, they would describe her as that way. And then we, the reader, would be like, oh, okay, that's Ciri. So a big advantage of the third person omniscient is it's a lot easier to write, I would think. You don't have to be as consistent. And the information dumps, or the expositions, if you will, you just put them out there. Like in this chapter, when we learn about the Kovari and the Redanian and the Kedwin and all of that, it's just spilled out there and said, and then we jump back into the narrative. Like we kind of in this did where it's like, oh, Dijkstra's kind of thinking about it, but not really. Like, I don't think Dijkstra was just running through that whole Redanian Kovarian history. But if that chapter was going to be third person limited, then it would have to be Dijkstra going through that. And we'd go through his thoughts and him thinking like, oh man, this happened and then that happened. So that can be a little clunky, whereas opposed to here, it's just sprawled out and you don't like it, skip ahead. If you want it, then you can do it. And especially in the storytelling medium of a TV series, you can't really hide it because we actually see it. And in the case of, I'm trying to think of, this kind of just vamping here, I'm kind of think of when that would actually happen when the Witcher TV series comes about. But in case there was a time when they were trying to like, you know, hide somebody's look, you can't do it because the actor has to be, it's going to be the same actor. Otherwise, he'd be like, oh, it could kind of be like cheating there. But also to hit on that is, with what is going on with as Game of Thrones comes to an end, the reaction of everything, I would like again to remind all the Witcher fans and those that are going to watch the series, which if you are listening to this podcast, you are definitely going to watch the Netflix series, to remember that it is an adaptation, okay? It is not a translation. It is not putting book to screen. It is an adaptation. You cannot begin to tell the same exact story on the page as it is on the show. So before people start to get all toxic, which it's going to happen. Like that's just the way fandom is today, especially with something that has a bunch of like nerdy elements. And again, there's no judgment here. I'm not saying people are nerds. I'm doing a podcast over a medieval fantasy book series, okay? There's nothing more nerdy than that. But there's a toxicity that has gotten into this, and we've seen it with Star Wars, and it has reared its just horrific head with this last season of Game of Thrones, where people just, want to shit on things because I guess they just feed off of it. I don't know. It's, to me, very unhealthy. And I just, again, want nothing to do with it. And so everybody out there that's going to watch this TV series, I hope you keep that in mind, that there will be characters, maybe characters you really like, that are left out. They may combine two characters into one. There's going to be created characters, ones that were never in the books, that might have a somewhat significant role because that's just would have made the storytelling better, or maybe just an easier way to, again, get some exposition in somewhere. And so, again, to beat it down again, it is an adaptation. It is not going to be exact, but I just hope everybody gives it a chance and judge the show based on how the characters are. And are the characters true to the characterization in the books? Not their looks, because again, even the way they're described, they're not going to look exactly that. And I've said it before, again, when using Game of Thrones as an example. Tywin Lannister looks nothing like he does in the books. But I don't think anybody would argue that his characterization wasn't hit down pat. And that's the important thing with this. So, again, that's just something I've been thinking about. As I've seen Game of Thrones comes to an end, all I think about is, how is this going to affect The Witcher and, like, the fans? Because there's already, you can see it on certain subreddits I've gotten the hell off of, and I've not, what is it called, like, joined? You don't unsubscribe, but whatever. There are certain Witcher subreddits that I just don't even look at anymore and will never look at again because the very loud, the loud minority of people have already made it seem like, oh, they don't like it because, generally because of the skin color or the race or ethnicity of the characters. And if that is that important to them, you know, whatever. I feel absolutely horrible for those people. Your life must really suck. But I hope you, stay the hell away from the show. If it bothers you that much, don't watch the show. Don't comment on it. So, again, I'm just very worried about what this could become, not based on what they're doing, but based on just like a toxic fan base. And so everybody give it a chance. Realize it's an adaptation. And let's have fun with it. Last update, and it will be the final update I do on this, is the Witcher audio story that I've been doing. It's written, but as you can tell by this podcast coming out so late in the week, it was a very busy week. It's probably going to be very busy for me from now on, period. So, like I said, I have to clean it up. I have to then record it. I have to do all the voices. I have to do the voices enough to where I'm not embarrassed by them to get them right. And then it will come out. I promise it will come out, but I just don't exactly know when. I've had a blast writing it. I've had a blast doing it. I think everyone's going to enjoy it. But the next time you hear about it will literally be when it pops up in your feed. So until then, that's just going to be it. Send all comments, questions, suggestions to WitcherPodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter is @WitcherPodcast. And as usual, all that information will be below. Next week, continue on as we visit, or we should say revisit, a certain mage whose death might have been announced a little premature in the Tower of Swallows, Chapter 9.